So in the meantime, I've called Jack Cole. You are, if I understand correctly, one of the founders of the organization that's called, well, do you call it LEAP in English?
Yes, that's the acronym, and that's the name we go by. Of course, the full name is Law Enforcement Against Prohibition.
Yes, so but you don't say L-E-A-P, you say LEAP.
LEAP, yes.
Okay, LEAP forward.
That's because we are taking a great leap to the future here.
That's great. So you started this organization. When did you do that and why?
Well, I served 26 years in New Jersey State Police, and when I retired as a detective lieutenant, I had served 14 of those years as an undercover officer in the Narcotic Bureau. I felt so bad about my role in implementing what today I feel is not just a failed war on drugs, but it's far worse. It's a self-perpetuating, constantly expanding policy disaster. So I sat down with four other police officers, and we tried to figure out what law enforcement should really be interested in doing. What should our job actually be? And when we boiled it down to the essence, we decided there's four things we should be looking to reduce: death, disease, crime, and addiction. And sadly, all four of those categories are just made infinitely worse by the war on drugs, so that wasn't what we wanted. What we decided we do want is reflected in our name, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. We want to end drug prohibition around the world today, just like we ended alcohol prohibition in the United States in 1933, because looking at that from the viewpoint of law enforcers, we understand the day after we ended that terrible law, alcohol prohibition, Al Capone and all his smuggling buddies were off our streets. They were out of business. They were no longer out there killing each other to control that very lucrative market. They were no longer killing our children, caught in crossfire and drive-by shootings. And they were no longer killing us police officers charged with fighting that useless war. So we know that if we were to legalize these currently illicit drugs, we could take them out of the hands of the criminals and completely end this prohibition violence. That's a big step, we believe.
Yes, that's a big step, because I think most people think, oh, but then everybody's going to use drugs and we will all be lost.
No, well, that's, of course, the first thing I hear whenever I say that. And that's just absolutely false. You know, there was a national Zogby poll done in the United States 3 years ago where they asked that very question. They ask, if heroin and cocaine were made legal today, would you try it? And less than 0.6% said yes. So it's not exactly a huge groundswell of new users.
So that's maybe exactly the same amount of people who will not use it because it's legal, because they only use it because it's illegal. That makes it fun.
Well, that's true. And, you know, we have found it by looking at other countries, for instance, the Netherlands, which decriminalized marijuana, 37, 38 years ago, the per capita use of soft drugs like marijuana and hashish in that country is one half of the per capita use in the United States. And the per capita use of hard drugs in that country, heroin, cocaine, methamphetamine, is one fourth of what it is in the United States. And when I talk to the leaders over there about why they think the hard drug use is so much less, they tell me, you know, when young people want to experiment with drugs, they want to experiment with soft drugs. And if they have a place where, well, once you're 18, like in the Netherlands, you can go to a coffee shop, buy all this you want, from people who want to sell you that, it's quite different than going to a criminal on the street corner who would much rather sell you heroin, cocaine, methamphetamine, even maybe give you free samples so that you get interested in that stuff instead of the soft drugs. So they tell us that if there is any truth whatsoever to this gateway drug theory for marijuana, the gateway is because marijuana is illegal and you have to buy it from a criminal.
So don't you think it will be too difficult to convince people that actually alcohol and well, most people, when you say alcohol is legal, then they say, oh, but that's not a drug. Yes.
Not only a drug, it's the second worst social drug known to humans. Of course, the worst one is nicotine in cigarettes. And in my country alone, cigarettes kills 430,000 people a year. Alcohol, which is a poison, kills another 85,000 people a year, not by getting drunk and running off the road. Just it is a poison. It'll eat holes in your liver and your brain. It'll kill you in the end. All the illegal drugs in the United States combined, the ingesting of all those drugs, kills about 17,000 people a year. And how many people are killed per year from ingesting marijuana? None. Zero. None in all of recorded history. So, you know, the stories you hear about these drugs are not anywhere near the truth.
So how does it come that this idea of alcohol is okay and that it's not a drug, and then you often hear alcohol and drugs, as if alcohol is not a drug. So how did that come to be?
Well, after just 13 years of having alcohol illegal, we decided that we shouldn't do that anymore. We should re-legalize it, and we didn't decide that because we thought that alcohol is a great drug and we should give it to our kids and stuff. What we decided was we couldn't live with the crime that we had created. You know, under alcohol prohibition, the murder rate and the rate of corruption of public officials and police in the United States raised to the highest point ever in our history. And when we ended alcohol prohibition, both those things fell down to almost nothing, and they stayed there until 1970, when we initiated the war on drugs, and both of those things shot way past what they were under alcohol prohibition now.
So life will be safer for policemen when all other drugs too are legalized. So,
absolutely, but it's not the policemen I'm worried about. When people raise their right hand and swear they're going to uphold the law and serve and protect other people, I mean, if we die doing that, that's what we signed up for. I'm worried about the people who are just out there in the public who are dying every day. You know, there's 95,000 people died in Mexico as a result of drug prohibition that were murdered by Mexican cartel.
I see, yes.
Over just a six-year period. That's the kind of stats you get from real shooting wars, not from police actions. This is killing thousands and thousands, hundreds of thousands of people all the time around the world. And if we end this prohibition, it will reduce death, disease, crime, and addiction.
So, but you propose just to legalize it, and everybody has to find out for themselves how to handle this stuff.
Yes, we propose to legalize it and to regulate it.
Okay.
Naturally, we believe in regulation. The only drug that we've had any success at all with reducing the use of is the worst drug known, and it's far and away the most addictive drug, and that, as I said, is cigarettes. That's far more addictive than heroin. But by 1985 in the United States, 42% of all of our population used cigarettes, and we said, we've got to stop this. We're just killing too many people. We didn't start a war on cigarette smokers. You know, we didn't arrest the R.J. Reynolds, the top cigarette distributors, as drug lords. What we did was we started a very strong educational program saying what these drugs will really do to you and what they won't, talking about cigarettes. And then we pretty much regulated cigarette smoke out of existence. We passed laws saying you can wonderful success story. And at LEAP, we want to point out that to achieve that wonderful success story, we didn't have to imprison one human being. We didn't have to destroy one person's life. So there's better ways to deal with these drugs.
Yes. Are there already countries where all drugs are decriminalized?
Yes, there's seven.
Seven?
Seven so far. And the first country to do it was Portugal. They did it July 1st, 2001, so they got a 13-year history now. Drug warriors like myself were telling them back then, if you do this, it'll destroy your country, it'll be chaos, you'll become the drug tourist capital of the world, everybody will be flying into Portugal to shoot dope, and nobody will dare walk down your beautiful beaches because of all the needles sticking up out of the sand. Well, none of that happened. What did happen was, after they decriminalized all drugs for adults 18 years old and older, drug use in every age category went down. But the biggest drops were among the youngest people, and of course those are the people we want to get so we're not continuing to feed this monster. So for children from the age of 13 to 15 years old, drug use declined by 25%. For young folks from 16 to 18 years old, drug use declined by 22%. Those are really significant figures.
So, and how come? Are they only doing it because it's illegal and they want to do something out of the box?
Well, I think that that has a great deal to do with it. It's sort of this fruit of the forbidden tree, you know. When,
yes.
When you say to a teenager or a young person, you can't have this ever, this is forbidden from you forever, then they say, I think I'll give me a little taste of that. In the Netherlands, we did a study of 10th graders in the Netherlands. The United States scientists did a study of them and discovered that 28% of their 10th graders have ever used marijuana, where marijuana might as well be legal, you know. And then when they did a comparison study on our 10th graders in the United States, they found out that 41% of our 10th graders have used it, where we treat marijuana like it's the devil's own weed. So, yeah, I think it has a lot to do with this fruit of the forbidden tree.
Mm-hmm. So what are those other countries where drugs are not illegal anymore? I'm very curious about that.
Well, the countries are Mexico, Argentina, Colombia. The latest one was Greece.
Greece?
Yes.
Only recently then?
Yes, just about a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm blocking on the others. I'm sorry.
Well, and was your organization involved in convincing?
The other one is Chile and the Czech Republic.
Okay. So,
and many countries have decriminalized some amount of one or two drugs, but these seven countries have decriminalized all drugs for adults.
Mm-hmm. And was your organization involved in influencing policy there, or policymakers, to get to that point?
We LEAP is nothing but a speakers bureau.
I see.
Today, it's 12 years since we started it, and we're no longer five cops. We're well over 100,000 police, judges, prosecutors, prison officials. We have supporters in 120 countries. And what we're doing is we're going out and we're telling the truth to the public, the media, and the policymakers. And we're changing the atmosphere around this conversation. We're changing it and making it something that people can talk about. You know, 12 years ago, this was what they call a third rail issue for any politician, and the police, nobody was talking about it until we came along. Even the drug reformers weren't talking about it, actually. They never talked about legalizing drugs. We were the first to do that, and when we started it, the reformers reformers came to us and said, oh, don't use the L word. If you talk about legalization, you're going to scare people away. People that we've been cultivating for years to just try to get them to decriminalize 1 ounce of cannabis, you know. And we'd say to them, no, if you talk about legalizing, it'll frighten people. But when it's police, judges, and prosecutors, the people that fought the war that talk about it, we don't frighten anyone. We educate them. And if we keep doing this, one day you'll be able to say the same thing. And that has happened. That's why we now have 20 states in the United States that have legalized medical marijuana. We have 16 others that have decriminalized some amount of marijuana for adults. We have 2 states that have legalized, regulated, and taxed marijuana. And after they did it in November 2012,
mm-hmm.
The first country to legalize, regulate, and tax marijuana was Uruguay, and they passed that law on December 10th, just about 3 months ago.
Yes, there's a lot happening quite recently, isn't there?
But we think we have a lot to do with that. We've made over 13,000 presentations in 32 countries in the last 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's police, judges, and prosecutors talking to these people, we have a credibility that nobody else has out there. And about 80% of our audience, no matter where we go, agrees with us.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think I know about that because, I've been around longer than almost anybody here except the original four. And I've personally given over 1,500 of these presentations in 32 countries.
Mm-hmm.
And I see what the reaction is, and the reaction is so positive, I can't get over it.
Have you been to Belgium?
Yes, I have. As a matter of fact, I spoke at the European Union in Brussels in 2004, and a little story about Belgium. I spoke in Prague in October
mm-hmm.
2010, and at an international drug policy conference, and one of the people who was there was a man named Carol Edwards, who you might recognize was your drug czar for the European Union from 2003 to 2010. And when I spoke, he sat in on my talk, which was a debate with the drug czar of the Czech Republic, and he, when it came to questions, he supported me so much that that night I saw him at a party that was thrown for us by the mayor of Prague, and I thanked him, and he told me, no reason to thank me. He says, I agree with you now. And I said, well, that's wonderful. In that case, you should join LEAP, and don't worry about us exposing you, because we allow current law enforcers or politicians to join us sort of in a stealth mood where we guarantee that no one's name will get released. He said, oh, you can release my name. I said, really? Then you should join our mm-hmm. our advisory board. And he did. That night he resigned his position as drug czar of the European Union, and he joined our advisory board. So we are convincing people that we never, ever imagined we would be convincing.
Uh-huh.
And he's based in Brussels, by the way.
I see. So I might have a talk with him one day.
He still works for the European Union. He's not their drug czar.
So you said you have 100,000 members. And are those all police, judges, prosecutors, or ex? Or are there also people who have other occupations?
No, they're also just supporters. Anybody can join LEAP, and we're hoping to get a couple million members in LEAP, and when we do, we'll go down to Washington and force those legislators to end this terrible war. And they will have to be forced, because there is so much money and power to be made by keeping these drugs illegal. But
yes, that's what I thought.
Yeah, in order to be a speaker, though, for LEAP, you have to be a 165 speakers and about probably around 20% of our membership is law enforcement, current or former law enforcement. But we've got 165 speakers. They'll go anywhere, speak to any group, and we do it for nothing. Nobody gets paid anything here. I mean, our speakers don't get paid anything. We've got a small staff of about six people that run the administrative part, and they get paid a pittance, not much.
Mm-hmm.
But we do a lot on a small budget, I'll tell you that. Our budget last year was around $650,000, and with that amount of money, we did 1,750 presentations in a year.
Nice.
That's quite a bit for the money.
Now, I see you also have prison officials or ex-prison officials. And this is a thing, well, I've done interviews about the private prisons in the United States. And
shouldn't exist as far as I'm concerned.
Well, as far as I understand, they profit from as many prisoners as possible. So
absolutely. Let me tell you a little bit about that. First off, this goes to the racism. And the racism behind the war on drugs is, this is probably the most racist policy we've had in the United States since slavery. You know, if you want to know who uses and who sells drugs in the United States, it's very easy. You look at the Federal Household Survey, and that says that 72% of those people look just like me, a bunch of white guys. Only 13% of them are black. But now, who gets arrested? 37% of all the arrests for drug violations are black. 60% of all our people in state prisons for drug violations are black. 81% of our people in federal prison systems for drug violations are black. This is literally the 21st century slavery. And
then slavery, in a sense that those people are put to work and they work for a very low wage or no wage at all.
Absolutely. Huh. 16 to 28 cents an hour is all these corporations have to pay. And the corporations are just happy as can be. And how can any corporation compete with these corporations hiring prison labor? It's impossible. You know. So now these private prisons have gone to Washington and are lobbying for longer mandatory minimum prison sentences so they can keep these people in there to work for these corporations. And when they finally do get out of prison, and these folks go out and try to find a job after they get out of prison, mm-hmm. there's no jobs out there because all the jobs that would have employed them are in the prisons.
Yes, I saw earlier that you have about 1% of your population in prison. That's quite impressive.
That's right. That's right. We imprison today about 1,009 people per 100,000. And in all the European nations, they imprison their population at or below 150 per 100,000.
Mm-hmm. So there is a war to be fought there because there are vested interests and that will need some convincing to make people accept that there will
sure.
be less people in prison then.
Mm-hmm. Oh, far less. We could close about half our prisons if we were to legalize these drugs and if we were to allow people to leave the prisons who were only there for nonviolent drug offenses. You know, in the United States, before we started the war on drugs, we averaged a little over 65,000 arrests in the entire country every year for nonviolent drug offenses. Then we started the war on drugs, and by the year 2005, we were arresting 1.9 million people a year for nonviolent drug offenses. I mean, that's just mind-boggling that we're doing that sort of thing. It's
mm-hmm.
unbelievable.
So you think that maybe the police force would have more useful things to do?
Oh, absolutely. I point out in my talks that our police today solve 61% of the murders in this country, where before we had a war on drugs, they were solving 91% of the murders in this country. And the major crimes, 40% 60% of all murders in this country are unsolved, 60% of all rapes and arsons unsolved, 75% of all robberies unsolved, 90% of all home burglaries, that's breaking into your home at night, probably while you're asleep, unsolved. You know, there's better ways we can use our police. Police are supposed to protect you from me and me from somebody else. That's our job. Our job should never be to try to protect every adult human being from themselves by saying what they can put in their own body. And it's when we are given that task that everything goes to hell.
Okay, Jack, our time is already up. So thank you for your time on this Sunday, and maybe we will call again some other time.
Thank you, Ace.
Bye.